across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, that's what the man said. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the state of Wisconsin Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's the beautiful, if smoky day up north. Okay, very smoky day up north on this Tuesday, July 25th. It is 66 degrees up here in Chippewa Falls. Folks listening to the Shaw and Waukesha, you've got 64 degrees right now. Listeners to the Eagle, WLCX in La Crosse, it's 68 degrees, 59 in Wisconsin Rapids. For folks listening to locally grown radio, here's what's on tap this morning. Even as presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump sticks to his false statements about early voting being corrupt in 2020, the Republican mainstream has begun turning its back on the former president and is making plans to promote absentee balloting in 2024. Awkward. Also, Christina Laurie has the uplift, stories from our daily newsletter about uplifting people and topics, including the super volunteer who helps personalize the EAA Air Venture for its many attendees. In our second hour, there's a new effort underway to help fight corporate monopoly power in our food supply, a measure that's good for consumers as well as producers. Plus, farmers in 27 Wisconsin counties are now eligible for some assistance because of our near drought conditions so far in this growing season. Along the way, if you'd like to reach us, our studio line number is 844-967-2789. And the email address here is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And if you can't catch us on one of these Civic Media radio stations all around the state, we have a live video feed of the show that runs on the Up North News YouTube page, Twitter, for what's left of Twitter anyway, and the Facebook pages for Civic Media, for Up North News, for Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, and for 93.5 The Tap in Chippewa Falls. Tune in to any of those. You can comment right on the Facebook page where you see the video feed of this show, and we'll see it and maybe even offer up a response right there on the screen as well. Aaron Zomers joins us from Madison as well, where he's flipping the switches and turning the dials. And honestly, though, I haven't seen the new board down there. Are there any such things as switches and dials anymore? Is it like all touchscreen? I can't see what you're doing there. Might be just one giant touchscreen thing like those new car dashboards and everything.
I'll never tell. No, it's a lot of faders and buttons. There's not really any switches. Not really any dials either.
I was going to say, whenever we say don't touch that dial, it's like very few dials anymore.
I mean, in people's cars, there are.
Yeah, I think we were getting away from that for a time, and people said, no, wait, we need that kind of tactile sensation of turning down a dial. If it's all touchscreen, it also means it can all go away. I think I told the story back in March about being out of state and getting this ride from the airport, and it was one of those brand new luxury SUVs that we used for ride sharing, and the entire dashboard was one touchscreen, which was awesome. I mean, you literally could drive the car without windshield. You could paint the windows black and still drive because of all the cameras and all the readouts. But if that thing goes and there's no manual buttons or levers, you are so screwed. So technology really cuts both ways on that.
Yeah, you better not drop anything on that screen.
Or that radio board, by that same token. I hear those things are rather touchy.
A little expensive.
I was going to say, I've got a laptop that the keyboard is still a little sticky to this day from, that half a second of spilling some Diet Coke on there, and it just sticks. Sticks with you forever. I mentioned yesterday about this time, my oldest grandson, who's about to turn 17, and he's here for a week, and he's got a buddy of his. And remember I mentioned getting up at 4:15 and noting on my phone that my Wi-Fi says, a new device, some VR goggles, a new device hooked up to your network an hour ago. And I was teasing him about that when I finally saw him. He didn't emerge from the basement till almost 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon. And I said, yeah, we mentioned that you were plugging in some goggles at about 3:15, in the morning. And he's like, oh, yeah, I heard you walking around at 5:30, as I was going to sleep. I just thought we are truly a round the clock household this week with everybody here, because he's going to bed at 5:30 a.m. And I'm wishing around 5:30 p.m. that I could go to bed if I could, because I'm carrying around the 1-year-old all day and the 4-year-old, and you know, the 9-year-old is running around like crazy. And doesn't a 5:30 bedtime sound good after all of that?
The PM, yeah, some kind. Days. Some
not
days.
Not the
for
AM
sure.
kind.
Oh no, not AM. Definitely not.
Oh my goodness, no. I shudder at the thought of it. But again, don't get me wrong. It's awesome having them here. It's so fun that the 4-year-old, you know, he's just, you know, grandpa's boy all the way around. And now the 1-year-old, the little girl, is doing the same thing now, where she's like walking to me in her own, you know, new walking, stumbly kind of way. It's like, no, he'll pick me up and take me around. So yes, I will. Definitely getting my workout that way. But it has been so smoky up around here, it continues to be so, that I think we're starting to get a little bit buggy, because normally we'd be out, you know, playing cornhole in the yard, or, you know, do, you know, sidewalk chalk and all these other things. And we're kind of cooped up a little bit more. So I really could use this stale air to go away. But, you know, I think we're going to have this for a little bit, and we're just going to have to make the best of it. We did get a boat ride in yesterday. I'm sure there will be one today, and hopefully not trying to outrun a thunderstorm. A little pop-up one came up around Bloomer, started to move in our direction. And so we thought, get in the boat. Let's head back down river. And that thing's got a lawnmower engine on it, 'cause it's a pontoon. It's a putt-putt. Somehow we made it just before the raindrops came, but if that's the extent of drama we have on this family vacation or staycation, I guess that'll work out for me just fine. Hey, got a lot to tell you about, including the Civic Pints blood drive, headlines, and much more coming up. First, let's take a break. Wherever you are this morning, right now you're up north. The Doobie Brothers' China Grove fits somewhere in today's history lesson, and music break coming up later on this hour. In sports, Al Frelick launched his first major league home run, and Christian Yelich hit a game-winning single as the Milwaukee Brewers beat the Cincinnati Reds 3-2 last night in their National League Central Division showdown. Despite the Brewers going just 2-for-16 with runners in scoring position, the team still moved 1.5 games ahead of Cincinnati and broke the Reds' 5-game winning streak. In fact, speaking of the bats still not really being where you want them to be consistently, Milwaukee leads the division. Despite ranking last in the National League in batting average, on-base percentage, OPS, and slugging. Thankfully, Brewers pitchers have the league's third lowest ERA at 3.93. Devin Williams pitched a perfect ninth inning for the Brewers, who have won 6 of the last 7 meetings between the teams, dating back to July 7th. They will do that again this evening and again tomorrow afternoon in that key division matchup. We've talked a couple of times here about the need for blood donations, especially during the summer season when blood banks run low, and yet the need is as great as ever before. And we're starting to see, as we often do around this time of year, more news stories about it. I see that Fox 6 in Milwaukee is really playing up how the American Red Cross needs the public's help to prevent a blood shortage, all the different ways that you can go to redcrossblood.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to find out where to give blood near you. And they list several in the Milwaukee area. Well, Civic Media is noticing that as well, and wants to help out, and has a statewide blood donation challenge. It's called Civic Pints, not the pint of beer, the pint of blood that you can donate and save a life. And in doing so, you can enter yourself into the Civic Pints giveaway and win one of many prizes that are being given out. So go to civicmedia.us, and you can find right there at the top information about the Civic Pints blood donation challenge. When you go to that page, it has links to all the many places where you can donate blood across Wisconsin. And then take a selfie while you're doing it. Put it up on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag Civic Pints. There's an entry form you can fill out as well, and you could win a prize. And I have been selling short the prizes that could be given away. I've mentioned that Brewers tickets were among them. It's actually 50 pairs of Brewers tickets that are going to be given away. 50 pairs of Brewers tickets are being given away as part of this blood donation challenge. There will be 50 pairs of tickets to the Wisconsin State Fair given away. And then there will be all at least 100 different swag packs featuring Civic Media, merchandise and other swag there. So all the places that you could donate blood are listed over on the Civic Media site. That's civicmedia.us. So go donate some blood, put a selfie up with the hashtag Civic Pints, and help save a life or two or many more. The Up North News daily newsletter comes out around 5 a.m. or so. And in today's newsletter, Christina Lori talks about one way that you can get less stress in your family's life, and that is to put your travel on repeat. In doing so, in going to some of the same places or doing some of the same things, you're building up memories. You have reduced anxiety because you're not reinventing the vacation wheel every time. And there are just some other psychological benefits that come from it. So it's not to say you always have to do the same old thing, but there is some value in repeat travel, kind of the thing we're doing right here at the Kreitlow household right now, where we always get together near the end of July for a week and just have a good time. So you could look for those details in our newsletter. Also in there, the 988 hotline, the new hotline, to help prevent suicide and address mental health concerns has been far more, the calls have been far more voluminous than the old number, which was some kind of a 10-digit phone number that would get about, 40,000 phone calls a year. The new 988 line has helped more than 90,000 people across Wisconsin and millions around the country. Also, on those national calendars out there, today happens to be National Wine and Cheese Day, and our newsletter has links to historic cheese shops and Wisconsin wineries, and you can sign up for that newsletter on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Click newsletter up there in the top banner, and you can be a part of all of the news that we share every day, every weekday, right around this time or so. Taking a look at some of the headlines this morning, the Republican Party has decided to once again embrace early voting in elections. And I do say once again, because while I think a lot of folks think of early voting and absentee ballot voting as some kind of a big Democratic push, the fact of the matter is that's only been for the last couple of cycles or so. And that was only because Democrats realized they finally had to catch up to Republican messaging on the importance of early voting. There were plenty of older Republican voters who over the years did a really good job. And I will say good job from an overall, American, civic standpoint of voting, of doing what it takes to vote, fill out that absentee ballot, get it sent in. Republicans were doing it. Democrats were the ones playing catch up. And then 2020 came along, and as we learned from the January 6th committee hearings, it was Donald Trump who quite intentionally was looking for any way to make excuses for the loss he was quite likely going to be facing against Joe Biden. After all, he was the one who running against Hillary Clinton but squeaked out a narrow victory in the Electoral College. And he saw that happening all over again and was prepared to blame anything. The system was corrupt, the media was corrupt, and the absentee ballots were corrupt. And recall that after he lost on Election Day 2020, he and his campaign immediately began challenging the way that absentee ballots were being counted, not everywhere, because absentee ballots are filled out everywhere, but only in the big cities, those big, mean Democratic majority cities, including Milwaukee and Green Bay, Racine, Kenosha, Madison. That's where the targeting was being done, saying the balloting is corrupt there. When a lot of mainstream Republicans knew otherwise, they knew and continue to know that Wisconsin and throughout the rest of the country, elections are fair, they are accurate. People work very hard to make sure that our elections are run fairly and that we have a good system that allows people to vote who can't get away from work on election day or for whatever reason, need other options in order to take part in American democracy. Again, Republicans knew all this, but chose to go along with Donald Trump as he continued to lie and lie and lie about early voting somehow being corrupt. He was even doing it a week or two ago when he was interviewed on one of those right-wing news channels and given a chance to again clarify that he wants to encourage early voting in 2024. But no, he continues to spread his big lie because that's what he's got to do. He's got to stick to it. Well, the Republican Party itself, the National Party, the Republican National Committee, has already embraced making a big public push for early voting in 2024. Basically, going back to their roots, the message, the responsible message that they had prior to Trump. And so Republican National Committee Chair Rona Romney McDaniel said Monday, launching the Republican Party's Bank Your Vote campaign, she said, in Wisconsin, when you have a football game, you don't wait until the fourth quarter to start scoring. We have to make sure, she says, that we're not allowing Democrats to get such a huge start during the early voting period that we have to make it all up on election day. It doesn't make sense, she said in a telephone conference call. And so they are going to do much more to encourage, educate, and activate Republicans to vote early. Now, of course, in throwing a nod to Donald Trump, they do say that this is part of what's called an election integrity effort, which again means we have to pump the brakes for a second and make sure we say this off on the side. The only reason anybody is talking about an election integrity effort is because Trump-supporting Republicans have been working so hard for nearly 3 years now to undermine election integrity with no evidence to back it up. It is a strategy to undermine American democracy, rooted in nothing, but to make excuses, to raise suspicions, and perhaps as well to suppress some voters. If people think the system's corrupt, they're not as likely to go vote. So they're going to call it part of an election integrity effort, but do not be fooled one bit. Our elections do have integrity. They have accuracy. They have fairness. And you should have always been feeling free to vote early, either by in-person absentee balloting or having an absentee ballot mailed to you. McDaniel says she has spoken with the former president and that he has been supportive of the initiative and that Trump has softened his stance on the subject of early voting. I would not say that that's the case at all. Trump is going to do whatever he thinks is in his best interest in that particular moment. And to that end, it has led to questions about whether Trump is going to show up at the first Republican National Committee presidential debate in Milwaukee. That's going to be coming up. And, you know, he certainly will, meet the threshold for being able to participate in it, but he's still continuing to be coy about, you know, whether or not he's going to take part. And, you know, whether you're talking about Rona McDaniel or anybody else in the party or the organizers of it, they're all kind of doing that shrug emoji where they go, well, he may show up, he may not. He may say nice things about early voting, he may not. Just remember that this is the same Republican Party where Trump in 2020 in Wisconsin went to court and tried to throw out 220,000 absentee ballots, legally cast votes. And that in 2014, well before Trump came along, Republicans in the legislature cut early voting hours. Because again, they saw that it was gaining in popularity among Democratic voters. And so again, under the guise of election integrity, they were reducing the hours when early voting was available. And right-wing groups like the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty have been fighting repeatedly in court to try to throw responsible Wisconsin voters off the rolls, with no evidence to back up any claims of anything irregular about it. But if they have to make voters jump through some hoops to re-register to vote, they know that they're less likely to vote. And whenever fewer people vote, the odds of a Republican win go up. So once all is said and done, there will be early voting next year. And whatever your stance, progressive or conservative or moderate, it's well within your interest to vote early because you don't know about bad weather, bad scheduling, whatever. It's there. Feel free to use it. When we come back, Christina Laurie's here with the Uplift stories from the Up North News newsletter coming up in just a bit. You're Up North. And now at 6:33 on this Tuesday, it is time for the Uplift. Christina Laurie joins us. She puts together the daily newsletter that you can get at upnorthnewswi.com. Christina, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Pat?
Very good, thanks. Let's start with the big event. I know Civic Media is on hand at Oshkosh for the EAA, the Air Venture. And a big event like that, which I will acknowledge I have not been to, but you know, have heard all about, a big event like that just cannot happen without a lot of volunteers. And so you're mentioning at least one. You're featuring a cool volunteer?
Yes. So there's this volunteer named Dave Jackson. And first, let me backtrack a little. When you're at AirVenture, most people's basic instinct is to look up at all of the planes. During the entire week, the Oshkosh Airport is the world's busiest airport, which is crazy when you think about it, because Oshkosh is nowhere near the busiest city regularly.
Right.
So while everyone's looking up, I'm going to challenge you, if you're out there, look down. Because while the planes are flying above, you're going to see just fields full of these wooden chocks. They, you know, are basically like a safety to keep the planes in place once they're down there. Okay. And those chocks are made by a volunteer named Dave Jackson. He makes most of them by hand. He decorates them. Over the past 30 years, he's crafted about 200 specific custom ones, but every chock is slightly different. And why he has to keep making so many is because he decorates them with names, years, and fun decals. Many of the pilots that fly in, they take them as a little souvenir back with them. So it's just a little fun backstory. You sometimes with these big events, you are focusing on the big picture, of course, and you kind of miss out on the little tiny, tiny things that go into making the event go off without a hitch.
That's very nice. Yeah. I mean, and why wouldn't somebody think, you know, hey, if it's been personalized, you know, I guess it never occurred to them that you could just, like, I don't know, spray paint over it and use it again. But I'm sure they really cherish that when they bring those things back home.
Yes. So, and it was funny because last year I was interviewing him just, and I was asking him about the most recent festival last year. And he was saying that, you know, he makes about 200 of these chocks every year. On average, they lose about 175 of them. So, do the math, you know, three quarters are lost. He said last year was a good year though. They only lost 135. So still has a lot of work to do.
There's still a lot of work either way. So, all right. We have a big birthday this week, the University of Wisconsin.
Yes. If you would like a little tongue twister, the UW-Madison is turning 175 this year, and there is an official word for it.
So not bicentennial, not centennial, not sesquicentennial.
No, what ready? I'm really zeroed in. I'm going to nail this. Demi semi septcentennial is the official word for the 175th anniversary. That is what the UW will be celebrating tomorrow. But we thought it would be fun to take a look back at first, just what sets our state university apart from others. So can you guess what number anniversary? I mean, what number college was the UW in America? Like what, you know, if I think Harvard is the oldest. So if that was number one, where does UW rank?
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. We've got all of those land grant ones that went on at some point. So I'm going to say 20.
198.
Oh, okay.
Well, I was surprised by that. Yeah, I'm sorry to put you on the spot. I just thought it'd be a fun guessing game for people out there. I didn't realize there were that many universities, but I guess we are a little, you know, farther west once you get past Harvard, William & Mary. Within the Big Ten itself, the UW falls in the middle of the pack. It's the fifth oldest of are now 14, soon to be 16 schools. We also thought it would be interesting to look back on the biggest moments in UW history. So the works for the UW started all the way back in 1838 when the Wisconsin's then territorial legislature passed a bill to create a land grant university at or near Madison because they wanted it to be near the seat of the government. In 1848, the state's first governor, Nelson Dewey, he approved the plans. Then 1851 was when the very first hall opened, North Hall. It was a mix. It was everything. It was a classroom facility. It was where they ate all their meals, and it was the dorms where they slept at night. I'm going to go through a quick other, a few notable years that I thought were interesting. 1885 is when the marching band started. Nice. 1907 is when the Wisconsin Union opens as the second college union in the country, second to only Harvard. 1924 was when Wisconsin General Hospital, today known as UW Hospital, opens. I was surprised that that had been around for so long, and next year will be their 100th anniversary. And then just a couple things more recently, in 1993, that was Donna Shalala. She resigned as UW Chancellor to become U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services under President Clinton. It's always a big honor when you get a Badger alum in the president's cabinet. 2001 was when the UW started using an internet-based grading system. I guess I didn't realize that that's only been around for 20-ish years. I thought schools might have been, you know, maybe a little bit more on the cutting edge when the internet was developing throughout the 90s.
I think too many of them had seen those early movies about how easy it was to go in and hack your grades. And so they were waiting for security patches. Let's go with that.
And they wanted to make sure we were going to get through the year 2000 first.
Right. That too.
They didn't want to have all their computers crash. Mm-hmm. And then 2011 was the first year that the UW awarded more than 10,000 college degrees in a single year. So those were just some of the biggest milestones. I know I live in Madison. It's often easy to take the school for granted, but living in a state, you know, wherever you live in the state, we just have access to such great public education, and, you know, not everywhere can say that.
And you were right. I double checked. Harvard is America's oldest university. You want to come within a decade of its founding year?
I know, I'm trying to think back. I have a sweatshirt that said established in 1638 or something, 16 blank eight. Am I close?
1636. You visualized it pretty good. Just a little typo in there.
Okay.
Good on you.
I was in a college debate tournament in high school, and we got to debate on the stage where they filmed the movie, The Great Debaters. And so I got a little sweatshirt.
Fine. That'll just take us into this next topic, which is also a great topic of debate, the Wisconsin state food.
Okay. So then I do want to throw this back at you as well. I'll let you know the official state food anyways is the Kringle, but if you could name any food, Wisconsin's official state food, what would you pick? Because for me, I would pick the cheese curd. I just think that is the ultimate, and specifically the deep fried cheese curd, because I think it's a nod to Culver's and that giant fast food chain founded here. I just think there's something, it's on the menu of so many places now, but I've never had one outside of Wisconsin that is even comparable to what we serve here. So what's yours?
Cheese curd was the first thing that came to my mind, but then after thinking about it for a bit, and I don't know the full history of the bratwurst, but that is pretty ubiquitous to Wisconsin as well. And if I were going to go with cheese curd, you'd have to go with the fresh one. It's about the cows and how squeaky they are when they are freshly made. Now, the fried ones are great, but you got to start from a really good quality squeaky product. So I'd go with either brats or fresh squeaky curds. What do you got? You got a list over there?
No, I mean, the official food is the Kringle. So
So it's just, and that was an act of the legislature where.
Yes. Yeah. And they didnn't consult us. I would have thought it would have, and if it was going to be a pastry, I would have thought it was the cream puff. I mean, we're approaching state
fair. Or the punchki, or yeah, we've got other things here too. Right. Look, I'm not taking anything away from the Kringle. The folks in Racine are great. I'm just saying that, you know, it sounds rather subjective. That I think if you made it an annual competition and held up an election or something, you might get different results on any given year.
Yes. Okay. But I have to go back to the cheese curds. So do you enjoy eating them when they're fresh and squeaky? I can't get past the sound. I don't like it. And it does something to my brain. I don't mind the taste, but I feel the same way I feel about those as I do blue cheese. Mm-hmm. It's just there. It feels like something you shouldn't be consuming.
I managed to get over both of those things. They both are real things, but in time, blue cheese is now one of my favorite things to have on a salad or on a burger in other places. But as far as the curds go, you know, there are not all curds are created equal, obviously. And I've never made them, so I don't know what it is that differentiates. But I know the good ones when I have them, and the squeak just adds something to it as well, with that little hint of a salty flavor to it. That I hear what you're saying, but I would say just power through it and you're gonna find a favorite. And next thing you know, you're gonna forget all about that squeakiness being uncomfortable. It's gonna be your sign that you're biting into your favorite.
Last follow-up, I have to ask, what type of cheese is the ultimate? Like what is your ultimate cheese curd? Is it cheddar?
Oh yeah, it's the yellow ones, and I've said before, and the folks at Nasonville Dairy, you know, they're not paying me to say this, but there's that little yellow shack right near Curtis on Highway 29, right before you get to Abbotsford if you're coming from the west, and you know, there's just and again, they'll hate me saying this, but it basically walk in and it feels like there's a bunch of sweet old ladies sitting around like a table, and they're bagging these things up, and they are just little nuggets of heaven. Now there are a lot of other places that have great curds as well. Everybody, they swear by Ellsworth, or you know, people like their different other types of cheese, like Gouda, like Marietta Gouda. I'm just saying that everybody finds a favorite cheese curd, both a squeaky one and a fried one. Back when Connell's Supper Club was operating up here in Chippewa Falls, I thought they made the best one of those. But you know, then you've got your Culver's and others as well. So everybody gets their favorite, which is why this makes for such a great debate.
Well, and when you go to the local farmers market too, they always have those fun flavored ones too. Mm-hmm. I know here in Dane County, Murphy Farms sells these ones that are pizza flavored cheddar cheese curds. Mm-hmm. Those are good.
They are indeed. And again, all kinds of different ways that you can find your curd. Christina Lurie, thank you so much. The newsletter that she puts together with these stories and more is available to subscribe to at our webpage, upnorthnewswi.com. Christina, thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And just a second here. Something must have happened with Pat's microphone. So he is working that out. Oh, there we go.
That? Oh, you know what? I can tell by that sound there is a short in this mic cord. All right. We're going to be fixing that. Sorry about that, Aaron. So as I was saying to nobody else in particular, the thing about cheese curds, they don't just come in the different flavors, though I'm not a flavored person. I'm more of a purist. But as we learned last night at dinner, they can also be used as a vehicle. And for Charlotte, the one-year-old, they are a vehicle for ranch dressing. There's been something about the kids in this family, the kids and now the grandkids, that they are clearly Midwesterners, because ranch must run in their veins. And so we're out dinner last night at the Edge up here on Lake Wissota, and they have, you know, these square cheese curds. And there's Charlotte, who, Aaron, you saw during the commercial break. She was sitting on my lap here with her little sippy cup of chocolate milk. And, I mean, she cannot get enough ranch dressing. It's just taking the one curd over and over again and dipping it in her little cup of ranch and just sucking that down. Eventually getting into the cheese curd as well, but I don't know what is the Midwestern thing about ranch dressing, but you know, my wife always has to have it for dipping her fries, and it's just, we call it ranch, which, you know, makes you think of things out west, but it's as Midwestern as it comes, I think.
I think so too. I know my niece Gracie has the same thing. Sometimes it's ketchup, but still, that's such a small child thing to just take your tater tot or your cheese curd or whatever and just dip the same one over and over.
French fries getting all soggy as you just continue to suck the ranch off of it. And then later she grabbed one of the swizzle sticks from somebody's old fashioned and was painting with the ranch dressing. So it's not just a condiment, it's a beverage and it's arts and crafts.
Now that's an advanced technique.
It's got it all. Absolutely. Let's take a break. When we come back, we've got today's history lesson, a little bit of a music break. And maybe we'll talk about beverages as well. If you like a Wendy's Frosty, but you need it with a little bit more of a kick, they've invented a little something you need to know about. That's coming up next. You're up north.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
It was on this day in 1995 that ESPN was at the height of its popularity and released its own CD, Jock Jams Volume 1, an album of high-energy, stadium-friendly hits like, Gonna Make You Sweat from CNC Music Factory, Get Ready for This by 2 Unlimited. It would sell over 2 million copies, lead to 4 more compilations, and just truly get stuck in your head with some of the jams that were on there. It was on this day in 1965 that Bob Dylan at the Newport Folk Festival played an electric set for the first time, horrifying folk music fans everywhere. On this day in 1959, a 13-year-old Dolly Parton made her Grand Ole Opry debut. She was introduced by Johnny Cash and sang the George Jones song, You Gotta Be My Baby, and received 3 encores. So clearly the 13-year-old Dolly Parton had a little bit of talent and a very nice future still ahead of her. All right, I'd like you to compare a couple of songs here because we truly run from the alpha to the omega in terms of, you know, what we do on our music break and our history lesson. It was on this day in 1788 that Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart completed his Symphony No. 40 in G minor. Here's the start of that. So if that's the alpha, here's the omega. A song that was recorded this day in 1966 at the RCA Studios in Los Angeles. It was the debut single by the Monkees, although there was only one monkey in the room at the time. Here's the song. Take the last train to Clarksville and I'll meet you at the station. So when that was being recorded on July 25th, 1966, the only monkey in the room was Mickey Dolenz, who does the vocals, because as you might know, in those early years, the group didn't actually play the instruments. They would later, they knew how to play them, but, you know, they weren't that great. They were hired to be actors more than musicians, but eventually would do much more live music on their own. But in those early years, and with that first single, it was just Mickey and some studio musicians.
Well, to be fair, Mozart wasn't playing the instruments on that last track either.
Aaron, you struck again. Yes, you could not be more right. The number one song this day in 1970 was by the Carpenters.
Why do birds suddenly appear every time you are near?
Carpenters, They Long to Be Close to You would be the number one song for 4 weeks in 1970. On this day in 1973, the Doobie Brothers released China Grove, a song we heard a few minutes ago. Lead singer Tom Johnson said that he made up the story about the strange little town and only later found out that there is actually a real town in Texas called China Grove, which is either an interesting twist of fate or it tells you what life was like for rock and roll singers in 1973 that they can't remember what they made up and what they'd actually seen originally. All right, this next song is going to need a bit of a setup before I play it here. And I would love to play it on August 13th, because it was on August 13th, 1952, that this song was originally recorded. But because August 13th is on a Sunday this year, I'm choosing to do it today because it was on this day, July 25th, 1984, that Willie Mae Thornton, also known as Willie Mae Big Mama Thornton, died at the age of 57 in a Los Angeles boarding house after a long struggle with alcohol abuse. Okay, who's Big Mama Thornton, who passed away at age 57 on this day in 1984? Well, on the aforementioned 1952, at a studio in Los Angeles, she recorded the song that you're about to hear, the original version. Y'all know it from Elvis Presley singing it, but once you hear how Big Mama handled it early on, you understand why she was the star she was for the time that she was. This is Hound Dog.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping around my door. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping around my door.
So Big Mama recorded that at the Radio Recorders Annex in Los Angeles in August of 1952. The song was released in March of 1953. It was all the rage 70 years ago this month in July of 1953. Elvis covered it 3 years later in July of 1956. Big Mama passed away this day in 1984. All right, one more. Let's go to 1992, and the number one song on the R&B chart was by Mary J. Blige. A little bit later on, we're going to hear John Fogerty's Center Field. It was on this day in 2010. That he performed center field at the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame induction ceremony, where he donated a guitar shaped like a baseball bat. And on this day in 1978, the birth of Louise Brown, Louise Joy Brown, the first human to have been born after conception by in vitro fertilization, or IVF, seen at the time as a miracle, as a medical marvel. But given what has happened since then in terms of the activists and the zealots who are working so hard against healthcare rights for women, it does make you wonder about the people who to this day see IVF as something that should be made illegal, along with a host of other things that have helped people who've wanted to conceive and who have wanted to have healthy pregnancies. But on this day in 1978, it was a big deal. It was a big, happy deal as well. All right, I mentioned earlier that the Wendy's Frosty has evolved. Is evolved the right word? Sure, we'll go with evolved, maybe is the right word. Because if you love your Wendy's Frosty and if you love coffee, well, Wendy's just unveiled a new caffeinated beverage for the summer, the Frosty Cream Cold Brew, along with some new coffee flavor offerings like vanilla, chocolate, and caramel. It's going to be available starting this week at Wendy's nationwide for people who would like to have their Frosty along with some coffee beans that have been steeped in cold water for 12 hours to get you as jazzed up as you can possibly be from now through the end of summer. That's one way that you can alter your favorite Frosty beverage, as opposed to the way that other people would do it with, something more alcoholic later on in the day. But that's a story for another time. We're going to talk about helping Wisconsin farmers up next. You're up north.